Back together again, you and I chatting on a midweek Wednesday, August 16th, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We looked at the continued wave of crime committed by many repeat offenders in the state, and we also welcomed Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist Dan Haar for his weekly update.
You know, as much as we have talked and do talk and, you know, we'll talk over the next few months about, whatever is to do about local, state, national elections. None of this really matters. Or maybe instead of saying none of it matters, it matters on a different level. If the streets that you and I traverse on a daily basis, the roads, the streets, the places that we shop, the places that we eat, the places that we choose to live and raise our families, or after the family is raised to continue to live until, you know, whatever happens, retirement, whether you move out somewhere or you stay there. None of that, none of the ancillary stuff that we get wrapped up in is really important unless there's safety, unless there's not only safety, but a real cold, sober, if you will, way to figure out what we do with some of the worst in society. And when I say worst of the worst, I'm not talking about anything to do with race, anything to do with gender, anything to do with ethnicity. I'm just looking at it from a cold, sober, kind of a black and white scenario, meaning what's right and what's wrong, and what are our lawmakers doing about it? Now, our lawmakers in Hartford seem to be now tied up and considering things like banning the sales of nip bottles in some cities and towns. They're all a quiver over this flavored vape thing, again, for the 34th time. They're still all a quiver about making sure as few people are stopped by police because of minor traffic violations. Heaven forbid we find out they're really a criminal. And, you know, there's just the equity with marijuana. There's all this feel-good stuff that you and I seem to talk about every day and day after day after day. There's all this kind of ancillary stuff. When I say to myself, but does anybody really do anything about the bad stuff? And what I mean is the stuff that continues to go on our streets. And what I mean is the stuff that goes on our streets, along with that, by people who, by their repeated actions, they show us, whether we like to admit it or not, they show us that they should not be free to roam the streets. And I don't know how you fix that, but there was an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I would urge you to subscribe to the Journal. You know, it's money well spent. It's a good cross-section newspaper. It's got a good balance of stuff. The editorials are unlike the New York Times or the Washington Post. You know, the Journal actually employs conservatives. I know it's tough for people to read something like that. But the Journal had a story that, and I don't recall the exact headlines, thinking about it a couple of minutes ago. But the gist of the story was, it's time to bring back mental asylums. And I know that has a bad connotation, and we all read the stories about, you know, places that were called asylums and sanitariums and mental wards. And, of course, Geraldo Rivera in his young days as a reporter for Channel 7 in New York, he did quite a expose on a place, frankly, that was not a real nice place. And that really threw his name up on the map there. So however you want to phrase that, a mental ward, a mental lockup, an asylum, a sanitarium, some people in a tawdry manner would say perhaps a nut house. I probably wouldn't do that. But the fact is, this story was interesting in as much as it suggested, hey, what do we do about people that continuously after numerous chances, after numerous sentences, after numerous trips through the judicial system, continue to pose a threat to law-abiding citizens, often in neighborhoods of Black and Hispanic folks, the ones whose representatives often push back against their own constituents' best interest by saying, well, no, this is all poverty's fault. This is all the fault of drugs. This is all the fault of the NRA. No, it's not. I don't know what it is the fault of, but it's time to stop saying that. And I look at this story, and a lot of the TV stations have been running with the video here. Have you been following this story? This is the story of a guy who was shot by a local police detective while he, and you've got to watch this video, this guy was hitting her over the weekend with a hammer. Nobody who is sane does that. I don't want to hear about COVID. I don't want to hear about his tough upbringing. I don't care. Yes, we can treat him. But this is the kind of guy, and we've had a string of these cases in Connecticut for the past 2 or 3 months. You know, I've got a few of them written down here. I can laundry list them if you'd like. But here is a guy who was shot by a police detective. She waited as long as she could while he was standing over her and hitting her in the head, in her body, with a hammer. And the guy was free to walk the streets. Now, what do we do in a neighborhood where we have some sort of an animal? I don't know, somebody's dog, or somebody's, I don't know what else would bite besides a dog. I don't know, maybe if they had a cockatoo or, you know, some sort of a bird, I don't know. But what happens usually if the neighbor's dog keeps attacking people? Something is done. The dog is either checked, taken away to a shelter, whatever, euthanized, but I'm not saying we do that to people. So we seem to have, especially here in Connecticut, where we have these arcane bail and bond rules, we seem to have more sense in dealing with a danger from animals than we do from people. 52-year-old Winston Tate was taken into custody Saturday after being shot multiple times when he refused to drop that hammer. This in the Middletown Press, Hearst, Connecticut Media. According to the arrest warrant, a witness said Tate hit Middletown Police Detective Carly Travis multiple times while on top of her. A witness believed he heard 7 to 9 shots as Tate tried to attack the detective, and the assault didn't stop until a witness shouted profanities to distract Tate long enough for the detective to move. That's according to the arrest warrant. And by the way, this story by Alex Woodless, Hardaway, Lisa Backus, and other staff writers. Want to give credit where credit is due. Tate was arraigned Tuesday, yesterday, in Middletown Superior Court, where the judge increased his bond from $500,000 to $850,000 for the Saturday incident. Tate was also arraigned Tuesday in at least 4 other cases. He's being held on bonds totaling at least $1 million. Now, that sounds like a lot, but if somebody in his family would put up 10% of that, which is $100,000, he'd be back on the street. Because we have this arcane rule in Connecticut that says judges cannot hold someone without bail. So we live in a state in a year, 2023, where you could have vicious, violent people, possibly if they are of some means or if some organization wants to do it, they could say, you know, the hell with public safety, we're going to let them back on the street. The prosecutor in the case described the strength of the state's case as overwhelming, saying it includes an account by a neighbor across the street and the detective's body cam footage. By the way, folks, you've got to watch this body cam footage. It is disturbing, and this degenerate is lucky to be alive. It's disturbing to watch. Both indicate the detective told Tate to drop his weapon, a claw hammer, three times before he attacked her. He hit her in the shoulder. He knocked her to the ground. When they were on the ground, the prosecutor said Tate swung the claw hammer at the detective at least three times. And this guy was on the street. Tate has prior convictions for assaulting public safety personnel. He's got prior convictions. We always hear that. Look at all the priors. The court records show he has an extensive history. Now, again, must he have problems? I guess. Nobody sane climbs on top of a police officer and swings a claw hammer at him or her. Nobody does that who is sane. So what do we do with people like this? According to documents, Tate has a criminal history extending to at least 2018. Records show he's been convicted, not arrests. He's been convicted in at least 14 separate cases. 14 cases with charges including assault on a public safety officer, third-degree robbery, second-degree threatening, and carrying a dangerous weapon. For his convictions, Tate has been sentenced to at least 25 years in jail, although, here it comes, folks, many of those sentences were suspended after various times served. You wonder why people are angry? Tate has a criminal history extending to at least 2018. That's what, coming up on 6 years. He's been convicted in at least 14 separate cases. Assaulting on a police officer, a public safety officer, third-degree robbery, second-degree threatening, carrying a dangerous weapon. A sentence of 25 years, suspended after varying amounts of time served. But by all means, let's worry about flavored vapes. Let's worry about banning nip bottles because it makes the ground dirty. It's maddening, folks. It's maddening. You have a system that allows and continues to allow insane people to walk on the street and nothing is done. It's time to bring back the asylums. I don't care where you put them. I don't care how you do it. There are people that should not be allowed to walk among us. Why can I figure this out and nobody else can? Let's get right to it, man. There is a lot of stuff cooking here, and to give us his usual keen perception on all this, editor, columnist, Hearst Connecticut Media Properties, Connecticut Post, New Haven Register, and all that, Dan Haar joins us. Dan, good afternoon. How are you?
You could name all the properties and you take the whole 17 minutes.
Yeah, right. What have you bought this week, Dan?
We haven't bought, but we keep expanding. As you know, we have a pretty strong presence in the Hartford area now.
Yeah.
We did buy the Journal Inquirer. That was back in June.
Yep.
Well, and in addition to that, we have folks in the towns east and west of the river.
Well, it's good to see, Dan, a commitment to journalism, and that's to be complimented to your company. Absolutely, absolutely. Talk to us about the Aquarian. Some rumblings. Aquarian's boss is not happy. What's going on there?
Yeah, the Aquarian is one of the companies, one of the utilities. In their case, they are a water company. It's the largest water company in the state with about 800,000 people drinking their water. They were seeking a rate hike of some $30 million, about 13% rate hike, which would have been about $61 or $65 in that range, depending on where you live and all that. And instead of granting all or part of the rate hike, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, PURA, the three-member board, in a divided decision, knocked it down to a $2 million rate reduction.
Wow.
And so this is after 10 years of not having any rate increase, or at least not having a rate increase as a result of a rate case. And so they took it to court, which is it's in court now, and they won a rare temporary stay or a stay of the rate decrease. But it's going to be a long battle. And now we have the CEO of Aquarion, which, again, is owned by Eversource, telling me that, look, unlike the electric companies, we are in an industry that's consolidating. Connecticut has 400 water systems.
Wow.
Many of our neighborhood groups that have a water system with a well. And he says these systems are being bought up left and right, and that's a benefit to the state to be part of a larger water system. We can discuss that.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, he said, we're going to generally look out of state. We don't like the idea of expanding in a state that has it. And now, to be clear, they are still buying systems in Connecticut. They're buying one in New Hartford just this summer.
Yeah.
They're expecting to close on it soon. So it's not that they're walking away from Connecticut. And to be also clear, they are in no way saying that they're going to abandon investment, which is constant in their current system in 59 cities and towns. This is a Bridgeport-based company, as your listeners know.
Interesting to see how this plays out. All right, something, Dan, that I've been talking about here is kind of interesting. It's been rumored for years, and oh my God, we have unanimity on the party heads on this, changing the date of the presidential primaries here in the state. What's the latest on that?
Well, my colleague Ken Dixon reported is yesterday or the day before, I'm losing track of days. No, it was Monday, that we're looking at a September 26th or 27th special session of the legislature to do just that. And as you said, there's near unanimity. It did not pass in the regular session because there was one senator, one little old senator who didn't like it, and he was threatening to filibuster. And there were some other issues involving it. And so it just didn't get done in the flurry. But there's certainly going to be no trouble passing it. I'm wondering why every state doesn't just keep moving it up and up and up. Why don't we have the primary now for the 2028 elections?
So, you know, Dan, I wonder, Dan, I was thinking about this, reading a story on it last night, and I wonder, these states all like to be kingmakers, right, Dan Har? They all and they all like to be the first or second or third because they want to be, I put so-and-so over the top. You know, Dan, I wonder if we do this, if the national Republican or Democratic committees don't say, well, no, you won't, because, we'd rather state X and X have the spotlight. Any thoughts on that or not?
Yeah, there's a confusing array of authority over when primaries happen. And as you said, the parties do have some say over it. But within a range of dates, Connecticut can move from April 30th, which is the current date, to April 2nd. Connecticut can't – we couldn't just decide we're going to be ahead of New Hampshire. But there's a bandwidth, a range of where we can be, and we're going to try to be earlier in that. And this is really an economic development thing as much as anything else, because we want our primary to be relevant, not only because we want our votes to count, although I suspect by the spring we're going to be all the way settled on Trump versus Biden, I suppose, unless some court proceeding prevents that.
Yeah.
But in any case, it does bring a lot of economic activity when there's a presidential election, of course, and when the more – whether it's a primary or the general election. Unfortunately, because of the general election electoral college, we don't get much attention in Connecticut except for, once in a great while.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we don't get that. So it's economic and it's political, and it's something, as you said, that everybody agrees. And we will most likely after the special session, the governor will sign it, and we'll have a primary on April 2nd.
Excellent.
Which is fairly early.
That's kind of early.
Yeah.
In the process.
Yeah, same day as New York.
Nice.
Same day as New York.
All right. Two more things here. I guess the Republicans, and I was watching some of the video of this early today, Republicans not bad about, not happy. They are mad about some of these EV requirements or suggestions, Dan. Is this in law or not to set these deadlines similar to what California has to phase out gasoline-powered vehicles?
Yeah, the way policy runs nationwide, because of a variety of court cases and other types of rulings, states can either follow the EPA standards for what cars and mileage, gas mileage, they can enforce, or the California standards. Mm. So there are several states that follow the California standards. Because Connecticut already follows the California standards, these are goals, what cars the average, what they call the corporate average fuel efficiency should be, you know, CAFE.
Yeah.
And because Connecticut already follows California, it was deemed by the Lamont administration that it did not need legislation to adopt the California standard that by 2035, there will be no gasoline-powered cars sold at all. No new. You could sell your old car,
yeah,
but there'll be no new. And this is a goal. This is not a law. I mean, yes, it's a California standard, right? But of course, 12 years down the road, we can't set a law for what we're going to do 12 years down the road. It's a standard that we're working toward. The governor just recently this year joined that standard. And that's what the Republicans today had a press conference. And since the governor joined, again, without legislation, the Republicans mm-hmm. have been saying, this is crazy. We can't meet this. We're not set up to do this. This is going to be unfair to the middle class because the cars aren't affordable, and so on and so on and so on. The Lamont administration counters by saying, look, relax, everybody. In 12 years, this is going to be the way it is anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that it's going to become a non-issue because we are moving to the electrification of vehicles anyway. It's very likely that the next car you or I buy will be electric. Maybe two cars down the road, you know, 12 years away. It's likely to happen anyway. And so this is the debate. The Republicans are using this as an issue to say that this is an anti-middle class, anti-democratic, small d move by the Lamont administration to impose elitist and impossible to meet standards going forward. And, you know, the answer is probably somewhere in between. I don't think it's going to be met by 2035. I don't think that's going to actually happen, but it's a goal that you set.
Sure.
And you know, maybe California will put it off to 2040 or something. You know, that's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Dan, do we have a major public utility singing "The Stars at Night Look Big and Bright Deep in the Heart of Texas"? What's up with that?
Well, it's Frontier. For those who don't know, Frontier is the what's called the ILEC. They have the landline service in Connecticut, but
yep,
of course the landline service is not a big source of revenue anymore the way it was when AT&T had it, or SNET. But Frontier is the old SNET franchise in Connecticut, for what that's worth, and it's worth less than it used to be. And so in connection with that, they, or separate from that, they've always had their corporate headquarters in Norwalk, Merit 7, those string of
yeah,
office buildings, where, in fact, we have our offices as well at Hearst. And there's been no official announcement by Frontier that they're moving to Texas. There was a memo from a Texas public official saying, hey, gee whiz, can we do X, Y, and Z? Because it looks like Frontier wants to move
here. I saw that, yeah.
And this is in the long – listen, Connecticut lives and dies by – it doesn't live and die – Connecticut's corporate headquarters industry, and
yeah,
I do consider the corporate headquarters to be a separate industry, rises and falls, lives and dies by where the CEO wants to be.
Yeah.
There are many Connecticut companies that have been here simply because the CEO wants to be in Connecticut, and likewise, there are Connecticut companies that have moved. Tenneco, Aetna, which is going to move because Bertolini wants to be where the New York Rangers play in Manhattan. It's not at all unusual for companies to move because of the whims of the one person, usually a man, who happens to be the CEO. Frontier has had definitely has been a prominent female headed company.
It's
as simple as that. And there's a lot of hand wringing and chatter right now about we need more tax incentives and all that stuff. Tax incentives aren't why they move. They move because it's where the CEO damn well wants to live.
Ah, there you go. Dan Hart, great stuff this week, my friend. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll chat with you next Wednesday. Thank you, sir.
Midweek. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. Our midweek check-in with Dan Hart right here.